Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have a pleasure again to have Dr. Daryl Greening. He is going to talk about job strategies for the 21st century, how to assist today's college students during economic trouble or economic turbulence. So anybody, if you have any questions, you can post those questions in the chat room, or you can actually text or email us, email at info@applecapitalgroup.com. Or you can just call in at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460. So in the meantime, we're going to take a break for a moment, get Dr. Green back on the line, and we'll go ahead and begin with our broadcast. But in the meantime, we're going to take a commercial break and be back in one moment. You listen to the Core Business Show.
You're listening to the Core Business Show. Sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
Now we have Dr. Daryl Green. We're going to talk about job strategies for the 21st century. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Green.
Hey, enjoying it. Glad to be here.
Great. It's kind of ironic. Before we go into a topic, I remember sitting during a seminar at the Potter's House about a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about ABCs of business. And this lady, she was an accountant. And she works for the airport district, and she said, and I asked her, why do you have like three PDAs? She was telling me her story. She said, well, I have a CPA firm in Los Angeles. I said, okay, you're in Dallas, Texas. Yes, but I am at the airport district, and I'm over blah, blah, blah. And so I had to have a PDA on for my company in Los Angeles. I said, oh, wow. That's a lot of trust there. And then, of course, she has her job here at the district here at the airport, and then she had another consulting business. She said, well, today, Tim, we've got to have, like, three jobs because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So that mindset, talking about job strategies in the 24th century and talking about your book, I think college students have to be faced with a lot today. When I went to school, I mean, my tuition was only $200 a semester, and my books was a lot more. But today, they're coming out of school with $100,000, and my gosh, $100,000 to $200,000. Our extra money was we can live off our extra money, buy an apartment, whatever, or a car. But today, they don't have that. So what advice do you normally have for college students who are coming out of college and coming to the workplace today?
Well, I think the best thing, I think you have to be hungry. You have to be able to hustle. And like I said, we have three kids, all of them out the house now. Two of them are in college, a freshman and a junior senior. And one
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're still trying to get them out. One of the things I do go to universities. There's a disconnect. There's a disconnect, and why I go, because I'm as a professional. There's a disconnect between what applause want and what students think they want, and you can see how that's a problem. So you know, I mean, of course, a GPA, they need to have the expectation that you need to have a 3.0. But in terms of the skills, you know, the communication skills, a lot of students don't have the communication skills. You know, some of them have been enjoying the college life, which I did, but they have no experience. And companies today, again, I mentioned companies today expect people to have 3 to 5 years. It's called plug and play. That when you get the job, you go full speed. And so a lot of students they aren't getting the experience. You know, they think a GPA is just going to get it. One of the biggest things I talk about is they're not building relationships. They're not building relationships with the professors. And what I found, you'd be shocked, but I found even with seniors, a lot of them, this is being general, but for the most part, a lot of them haven't been to the career center that will help them get jobs. And I talk to career center individuals. They say they can't get students to come. You know, and so I would say they need to, when you get in school, your freshman year, you need to go to the placement center. You need to start trying to work on internships. You need to be building relationships with your, but they're not doing that. And it's really, and so when they get out of school, they're frustrated. And here's what they do. Most of the students, they wind up, and there's a study that's saying 70% of the parents are now financing their students by 70% after they graduate. So they're letting them stay in school, go to grad school. They're paying their bills, letting them have apartments, or staying with their parents. And so the parents still have that financial burden. And so a lot of them are frustrated.
Wow.
Frustrated at the outcome. But I think, you know, your parents, a lot of them don't, some of the students don't want to listen. You know, you're getting advice. And so I think there's, you know, you want to be grown, but you don't want to listen. And so I just think a lot of those things, you know, just listening, just taking advantage of those relationships, and it's all about relationships right now. With for every one job, there's 25,000 applicants. You gotta have some connect. You gotta stand out. You gotta build your brand, and that's one of the things I try to encourage them to do.
Well, is it easier to build your brand with social media today? You know, companies are looking at Facebook
and looking at
all these other.
Sure.
These options. So parents need to be more proactive and say, hey, now look, you know, maybe I had to shake them a little.
Yeah.
You know, at 18, you can't shake them.
Yeah.
It's not assault. It's not child abuse.
We have the Creflo, so yeah, you don't want to do that.
Well, I guess you can't do that. Okay, yeah, I just heard about that. So when you're actually going to have to be more proactive in kind of helping them build a career. And once they find what they want to do, you got to start marketing them at day one.
Sure.
Maybe put them a LinkedIn account. Maybe and say, hey, can't do this on Twitter, can't do that, or you're going to be homeless, or got to make it extreme so they understand and believe, because you got to be careful on what you actually post out there, because it reflects the company.
Sure.
There is a sense of companies even asking for Facebook passwords to look at your timeline. Have you ran into that in the course of your research?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. I talked to him. I was going to Alabama A&M University with some corporate professionals at Human Resources, and they're saying the first thing they do is they go on Google and they find out all the things they can find out about you. They go to your Facebook page. They do all of that. And the whole thing is elimination. They're trying to eliminate you. So when you, it's not only what you have on your Facebook page and what you're tweeting. It's also who's you linked to. And so I mean so you have to be careful there. But one of the things I want to go back with you talking about the parents is that one of the things that you don't want to do as a parent, and it's one of the things is that you want your sibling, your children. To be able to survive. And what I've seen a lot of parents, we call them helicopter parents. They're going to school with the students. they're calling professors because the students they've always had A's and now they're getting a C, and so they're having it out with the professors. They're taking. I've seen some parents actually doing the homework with the student. These are college students, and so when they're able, they don't have the parent, they can't survive. And so what I'm encouraging parents to do is you have to build those things to make them mental tough. You got to let them handle that bill. You deal with that bill. You made it. You got to let them, we call it, hit hard not. You don't let them go to the bottom, but if you don't, then I see parents, they're not only raising their kids, they're raising their grandkids because the kids just can't cope. And that's what I kind of caution. You can't put your kids in a situation where you're doing all the responsibilities. You made it very easy for your kids. They weren't washing dishes. They weren't doing any chores. And now this kid is now 30, and they can't find it. They go faking a job search. They go online, put two or three resumes out and applications, and they're finished. Not beating the streets. I think still people like face-to-face. Beating the streets count. So it's very complex.
Wow. Yeah. So when you wrote your book, did you just base that on your research and base that towards what you had to face with the parents with three kids and they're going to be in this marketplace? What inspired you to come up with this title and write this book?
Well, it came about. I was doing a 2-day tour with the Urban League, National Urban League Black Executive Change Program. I went to Lane College, which had some renowned students. But again, I saw those gaps. Talking to the placement officers, talking to the students, just talking to the various students. And so I started working, doing research, a lot of research on that. What is emerging? What are the hot things going on? What are students doing in order to be successful? So I started mapping those out, talking to some professors myself. And again, having three kids, I have my own test tube to see what's happening. So, trying to put those things together. And I had a co-writer. He's a co-worker with me, and he had a lot of experience in trying to encourage students. And we tried to put those things into this book to help these young people out and help the parents out to kind of to help those students know that you don't start looking for a job. You're a senior. That process needs to start when they're freshmen in college.
So why parents don't understand that? Is it they take for granted that the things would take care of itself?
Yeah, I think again, not stereotyping all parents, but I just think you got your kid. The kid just went to high school, just graduated. That is a major milestone, and you feel, hey, if you're paying the way, you figure. You're paying $30,000 a year for your for your child. You just figure it's gonna work itself out. You just figure that they're gonna be able to find a job. And now with the economic crisis upon us, you just can't take that for granted. You got to make sure. We did it for our kids that as a freshman that when they start school, that. There are all kind of laws that they can't share information, registered office or the financial aid. So I had our kids go, and you go, and we went to the financial aid office. Went to the registered office and said, you need to sign this permission for us to do it. And our daughter was kind of reluctant. I don't want to do this. I said, well, if you don't do that, then your financial support is not going to come from here. And so she did that. And I just think you have to know what your kid's doing in school. We have some cases I've heard. Some parents, the kid has flunked out of school. The parents are still paying, and the students are staying in an apartment. That has happened. So you have to use some common sense and wisdom to have something built in place. You want to see those grades, and so that's why I kind of encourage the parents to take some responsibility to make sure, because you're investing that amount of money into your child.
When it comes to, there's some kids who are just not pointed out to be in college. I guess if you have a special skill set Well, yes, you know, they a good communicator, or they go to the vocational school in high school.
Yeah.
You know, if they're on the path of law enforcement, yeah, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Music, that's not a problem. Engineering, they go to those specialty schools, yes. You can really just gear them. They made it through that point. You can pretty much kind of keep that path going, because they usually they're going to end up choosing that career path in high school. Hey, I want to go to the high school of performing arts because, or I want to go to the vocational school because. That's a great thing to start off. You just have to keep the energy up. However, for that average high school that doesn't specialize in anything and now they're a generalist, your kid might be good at high school level to get things done.
Yeah.
Might be academically ready, but just hate school. I mean, I've heard this over and over. Oh, my God, I just hate school.
Yeah.
I'm just graduating just so I can just graduate and so I can get out and do my own thing.
Yeah.
And what do you say to that student or that youth and that parent? Hey, you know, of course, like I mentioned in the last episodes, we had the four.
Yeah.
You had the military. You had become a religious. If you're lucky enough to get into the government, you know, or go to a vocational school and or college, and if they say, hey, I hate school, then maybe you don't want to send them to college.
Yeah. Well, what I do is I would introduce them to musical chairs. I've actually done this. I have a student go walk around in a musical chair, but it's a law of scarcity. It basically says that when a person perceives that something or someone they want is limited quantity, then the perceived value of that becomes greater. And so there are not many ditch digging jobs left. You know, you say, so you have to have some kind of specialized skill or some sort of value that makes you worthwhile. I mean, there are, again, all these 15 million people unemployed, a lot of these individuals have degrees from noted schools. So that's why I say with branding, they're at the same time, that's why I call it ironic, paradox, a paradoxical situation, where at the same time, a company's laying off thousands of workers, they're hiring some on. And so you have to have those skills, a unique skill set. My unique skills is engineering, business, strategic planning, all those packages, and I'm a writer. So it sets me apart. So I'm not really an engineer, but really I'm not really a business person, but I'm a strategic. So you have to come up with a unique skill set that can't be duplicated in the marketplace. And for those individuals, so say for instance, they go back to that individual that hates school. You know, I just think if you hate school, but learning has to be a lifetime process, then maybe you need to become a CNA, a certified nurse assistant. In the state of Tennessee, at least in Knoxville, that's about $800. You can go to the American Red Cross. You get that. You go work in a nursing home. You build that skill. Somebody in the nursing home likes what you're doing. You're doing a good job. And they say, you know what? We want to increase your learning, increase your skill. Maybe you need to get this certification and become a radiologic a person, a radio technician. So that's where you have to be strategic. I mean, learning, I just maybe you can explain to me or so, your audience, I just don't see a way through this landmine of technology and innovation not having any kind of skill set. I mean you can hate school, but the learning, you can learn yourself, but I just don't really see a path forward without continuing learning.
Well, yeah, you will have school. I mean, there's no way that you can get around it. But maybe if they say they really hate school, but, you know, you can send someone for a short period of time at like a vocational training, because it's not really long. I think what people look at, what, 5 years? You know, when I went to school, the kids have it lucky because we had a 5-year track, and we had to go during the summer the last 2 years in order to get an education degree.
Wow.
There's no way to get around it because the track, you had to be on course because the education track is a whole year. And then you have an internship, which is one semester. So you really can't take any classes during the internship when you student teach, and maybe one or two at the most, but, you know, most of your day is dealing with your student teaching. So, and, you know, you just couldn't get around it. So you had to go to the summer in order to graduate on time. But I think what at an 18-year-old, what they look at and really think about it, 5 years is a lifetime to them.
Sure.
And my gosh, it's turned 5 years. They remember being 12. Look how long it took them just to get to 18. But that then multiply that, and if you say 10 years, oh my gosh, it's like a death sentence, become a doctor. But I'm looking at your book, and here you have the table, and it says America top stress occupations. The firefighter is number one. But that's a good skill.
Yeah, it is.
And they're hiring firefighters across the nation. And you have your camaraderie. Same thing with the police force. They take care of their own. They are a community to themselves. So, no, if you wherever you go, you're going to be taken care of.
Yeah. You know,
corporate executive. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to share, and it's another statistic that really blew me away, why we need to be concerned by our kids. Because of globalization, there's a normalization of wages. We talk about a living wage. But what has happened, there's a study that says, what does a middle class wage, annual wage mean across the world on average? Can you tell me what that is? What would you think would be the range for middle class, you know, a person considered to be middle class around the world?
Just the States or just in general?
No, in general, like for different countries, take an average of the United States, Europe. What do you think? You know, the developing countries. What would you think it would be? 18,000, 20,000.
Probably, if it's third world. Well,
take the average.
Third world nation. Okay, let's take the average. Let's say about 20,000.
Okay, the statistics that I saw said between annually. Across the world, the average is between $800 to $8,000. Well, actually, it was $700 to $8,000. That's mind-boggling. Just
wow.
Annual income. So that's what I'm saying. And so what you're seeing, you know, companies, I want cheap. And so they're going to all these underdeveloped countries, and they're paying them, maybe pay them $1,000. Well, they're paying another guy in the United States $70,000, or in the United Kingdom or Canada, they're paying these guys $60,000. They're paying this guy $1,000, and so companies around the world are trying to find these sectors where they can find these workers that actually what you're doing, you're increasing their standard of living. You understand what I'm saying? So you're increasing their standard of living. But so now you go back to this engineering job or this say accounting job where this person was now making 60, they're going to India or somewhere else, and this person's getting $3,000 a year, and they're telling you, you know, in order to be competitive, you need to we'll hire you back on, and maybe you make $30,000 a year, and maybe you have to do something else. This is happening all across the country. Because of
all those things. Yeah, if you really look at it, you know, in one sense, I guess that's why retirees normally will leave here and go to a foreign country and live it up because they can stretch their dollar a lot more.
Yeah.
They can live like a king than versus being what they, you know, what they hear in the States. But I guess you're bringing them up to middle stream and just using the world resources. When you talk about market trends in the 21st century in your book, kind of explain that particular chapter, the landscape of doom.
Kind of looking at what's going on. There's what we call strategic foresight and looking in the future, looking at trends. And you know, one of the things that we talk about is the whole thing about globalization. I mentioned again, you have you know. We're not really making too much. We're still making in terms of manufacturing, but a lot of those things are going abroad to companies like India and China. I mentioned, again, the age of a part-time worker. You know, companies are trying to reduce people from less than 40 hours and working them to death. And so what we're seeing is the decline of the full-time worker and really the age of a part-time worker. And what I'm seeing it right now, where you have, you mentioned this, Tim, earlier, you have somebody working two or three different jobs, and they're not even seeing their kids, but they're just trying to make ends meet. And so I say that's not atypical. That's going to probably be typical for the future. And one of the things now is we're doing a very diverse world, you know, and so diversity, multicultural workforce, where you have various people, Muslims, people from third world countries, people from all walks of life, they're in the same place. And we already talked about the four generations that's there. So companies really have not done enough in terms of making those workplaces accessible. But that's what, and we're going to see more of that as people seek to continue to try to come to the United States, because in spite of what everybody says, everybody wants to be in the United States because there's so much opportunities. And again, I mentioned the quest for gold talent. People across the world are going to be searching for this unique skill set that you have. And with technology advanced, you mentioned about the PDAs. You know, I got a Kindle, and people have iPods and tablets. Those things with young people, those things are just how you work. They don't know how to function without those things. And social media again, you take, and I think it's very interesting. You take a boss. He got a young person who's 20 years old, and he's telling them that young lady wants to help make decisions. She just got on board. She wants to be a part of that. And you know her manager is a baby boomer. He says she has to follow the right protocol. And she's saying, "What are you talking about? I got 20,000 people on my friends list in Facebook, and I have 10,000 followers. So I have as much influence as you." And really, she's right when you talk about social media. Social media has really changed that. And I think those are some of the trends that we're looking at in terms of the future.
Wow. You know, I'm going to segue back to the lady that that worked at the airport, and she's in managed positions there. But she did say, because I was wondering, okay, you have a firm in Los Angeles and you have this job here.
Mm-hmm.
She said she came here because relocation, because her husband, but her partner's still there in Las Vegas, but also she said she's sponsoring her kid to go to Harvard because she has to come out of pocket because she can't get enough aid to pay for him because of her position. So it came like three, last one reason, sorry I didn't mention, because her husband got relocated here, and she still have a firm, and she's still running there with that partner. And then she said, okay, while I'm here, then I need to work on my get a second retirement. But the third thing is she was actually paying for her son's college tuition at Harvard.
Wow.
So that's probably why she was doing the third thing, because he, even though he has scholarship, but she said it's so expensive, and she didn't want him to be saddle-strapped, and she'd be saddle-strapped with parent loans. She just took anything she has on a third option. That goes all to just taking care of that debt.
Mm. Wow.
So I want to put that footnote in for her. But that's going to be a really commonplace because, you know, we're talking about tuition from the 80s, which wasn't much at all. It was affordable.
Yeah.
People can pay them, you know, a once-a-month salary for the for tuition for the whole year.
Yeah.
You know, the housing is another issue, but tuition – I mean, like the schools in the last 20 years have just gone crazy with tuition.
Yeah.
But when you're up there, you can't necessarily have a tuition at $20,000 bring it down to $10,000 because now your whole system is based on that.
Well, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The whole thing, you know, and it goes, I was just looking at my chart. One of the things I do is this whole thing about wealth creation. Why are you even going to school? You're going to school for an opportunity. And I have a little thing where I talk about, you know, wealth creation in terms of, wealth creation is, if you think about a bar chart, on the bottom you have talent, skill level, and on the top you have opportunities. And in terms of, you have maybe a curve that talks about success. Success is networking and education. So you can take a person that has little talent but is given an opportunity, a.k.a. maybe Paris Hilton. You know, she has an opportunity because her parents are famous or are rich. She don't have that much talent. But you take somebody, you know, who like a LeBron James. you know, he has the talent. He's given the opportunity to demonstrate that. And so I think as parents, I think as students, you have to evaluate, do you go to Harvard? I mean, because I know a lot of people who gone to Ivy League schools, have heard about them, and they're in the unemployment lines too. So maybe I go to a 4-year college. I can pay for it. My parents can pay for it. And look at those options, because really, you're using the same textbooks. And really, there's a debate that probably needs to be going on in the academic community. If a guy who's a professor, who's also has been an executive, and you take a guy who's maybe been at an Ivy League school, and that's all he's done, who can share with the students, give them the better benefits, if being saying that the experiences are different, and the educational levels, maybe that professor went to a 4-year school, state school, another one. So that's the debate that needs to be taking place in terms of, you know, do you go to a school that's very expensive, or do you go to a school that's local in your area and have and can you get the same quality education? I think the answer is yes.
Okay. Is there a brighter day for employment these days?
I think there is. I think it's a team approach. I think students need to build relationships with the professors. I've seen programs that will give students summer internships, give them a job after college, and they don't know because they're not engaged with the professors. Working with the parents, where the parents become an advocate for their kids, but they don't become a crutch for the kids. We're letting them build that mental toughness, maybe letting them pay some of their rent, letting them, when they come home for the summers, you either work, if you can't find a job, you can't find a job, then you need to volunteer your services at some place like the American Red Cross or the Boys and Girls. You need to do something. You should not be in the house, sleep until 1 o'clock. You need to be doing something. So I think it's a team approach. I think there is brighter days ahead, but I think there's going to be dark days too. So you got to have a vision of something better.
When it comes to, I think, and also in your book, you say emerging careers for the future. You have blogger, you have content and community managers, green funeral directors.
Yeah.
Okay, you can be green with formaldehyde. Patient advocate, senior move management, social media strategist, video journalist, which we know, virtual business provider, as some of the things. And also you mentioned earlier as pilots. My wife is a flight attendant, and
wow.
I believe pilots make a lot of money. Flight attendants do pretty well. They can just keep working, and they get, you know, they work 3 days a week, and they get a, you know, full-year salary with the month's vacation. So it's kind of a win-win both ways.
Yeah.
But when you talk about a pilot, of course, if you want to become a pilot, FYI, I would say go to the Air Force and go that route, learn how to become a pilot from them, and then go to the airlines because they will hire you faster coming from the military, because they know you can fly and you have all these hours already built.
Yeah.
Use that time and use that money for schooling on their dollar than versus you paying out of pocket, because it's really expensive for flight school. But they make extremely – no, the pilots are in the hundreds, $200,000 range. Depends on experience and hours. But you got to touch about this green funeral home director. What is that?
Okay, well, first – Tim, what you just described, the process is strategic. You just took a situation. I want to be a pilot, and you took the route in terms of doing that, using the military as a way of leveraging. What I was going to say, that's really what students today have to do. In terms of green funeral direct, this whole concept of green, reducing waste, for the environment. That's really what it entails. You know, really, you see a lot of that now because a lot of people are cremation. They're going their route because of cost. But trying to preserve the environment by using, better products that's better for the environment in terms of what they do. That's really what it boils down to, being environmentally conscious. in terms of dealing with the deceased.
Wow, that's amazing. Also, let me run through, I guess, number three, you said corporate expectations of workers. Can I explain that section, the corporate expectation of workers, if you do land your corporate job?
I mentioned about this this concept called plug and play. Companies expect employees to come prepared. They're looking for people who can critically think. A lot of people, they're looking for self-starters, you know, people that I don't have to ask, especially at the, you know, the white-collar jobs. Certainly they look for that. In certain jobs, creativity becomes important, thinking outside the box. And for the most part, we have not done a good job of allowing our kids, our students, to think outside the box. Now, when you went to kindergarten, I would actually say, all the skills that you learned in kindergarten are the skills that an employer needs. Being able to communicate, being able to work well with people, being able to listen, and bringing a certain level of enthusiasm. And if you think in kindergarten, there's a lot of enthusiasm that goes on. Well, employers are looking for that same kind of enthusiasm when you come into work. They don't want anybody who's always gloom and doom, always complaining. They wait till you get on the job long enough. I guess you can do that, I guess. But they're looking for people that make an organization better. But really critical thinking is really a key component. Again, strategic thinking about not only the day-to-day thing, but looking at long terms on what unintended consequences can come by certain decisions. And that's what...
Wow.
I talk about corporate expectations for workers in my book, Job Strategies for the 21st Century.
Okay, and those are job strategies. Okay, and you did mention Southwest in your article as well, and it's kind of ironic. Also, the job strategies for the future, and you kind of list a full section of that. Kind of explain those particular strategies. What is going to help that person prepare them for that particular job and what they really need to be doing to try to land a job, even if they've been out for a while?
I mean, that's great. I have a whole – well, one of the things that your listeners may want to get a note, the biggest buzzword of 2012 is becoming indispensable, becoming very valuable, and have a unique skill set that cannot be duplicated. One of the critical things is developing your own brand. When you come into, when an employer looks at you, looking at your Facebook page, or looking at your article you wrote, how do you set yourself apart? So developing a critical brand is very important. Networking is also one of the attributes we consider being important is part of being dispensable. Those things are really what we consider. There's more communications. Being able to communicate is very important. It's a skill if you learn, will be very important. And the ability to network are some of the key things I would say is very important in building influence and career sustainability for the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you think? Do you think things are going to get better over time with this economy? In the short term.
In the long term, things will be better. In the short term, I think it's going to be tough because again, we go back to it goes back to this whole concept of globalization. You know, companies are ridding themselves of non-value functions that they run. And they're looking to countries across the world to provide that source in a very inexpensive way. And companies know, in terms of increase their profitability, they can do two things they know. One thing is technology. When you introduce technology, you can reduce your cost in introducing outsourcing functions. All those two areas relate to labor. Labor means people. And so that's why I say it'd be difficult. So, among those millions of people unemployed, again, companies, I think HP announced that they were going to reduce their workforce overtime. I don't remember the term, 10%, but you got large corporations doing that, and so that they can compete with China has companies too, and those companies are being subsidized, and so they're trying to leverage the playing field. And how they do that is with the labor force. So for those individuals that are prepared, they have that passion, they have a vision, they have the right skill set, those individuals are going to do well. Again, if their brand, and my pastor talks about this, everybody wants to be outstanding, but no one wants to stand out. In this millennium, it pays to stand out. And that's what I encourage people to do in job strategies for the 21st century.
So how can they stand out?
Standing out, writing an article, doing it goes back to customer service. Understanding what your customer wants. You know, if I got an employer, I know there's I'm looking for opportunities. You know, they're looking for somebody who can maybe there's a party that needs to be done for the corporate executives. I jump on that. I'm putting my name out there. I'm organizing that. I'm getting a name out there. They understand that. But also you can do on the internet. You can go to associatecontent.com and you can start writing articles on certain areas. That way when they Google you, people try to find you, your name comes out. Putting a dynamic profile on LinkedIn.com and then joining some of those groups, answering some of those questions, becoming an expert on those. It's all about relationships. Those are the ways that you stand out, building those relationships.
Wow. And, you know, in that last section where it says the critical job strategies for the future, you have branding, communication, which you keep talking about, the articles. I guess you got to sell yourself globally, and then sell yourself. You got to set yourself up for the employer so when they begin to do their due diligence, they can see more about you and think to learn more about you and see if you're going to be a good fit for their organization. And, of course, you talked about networking and talk about the opportunities. But how can you make yourself unique?
Okay. That's a great question. I'm going to go back one step. One of the things in recruiting students and interviewing students on campus, you will not believe that students aren't prepared. They aren't prepared. They don't know anything about the employer or know very little things about the employer. So doing your homework. To your question, I think one of the things developing a personal strategy for your career. You know, you got to list what you want to do in terms of what's your long, maybe your short-term goals, 2 to 3 years, and maybe your long-term goals, and building what we call strategic alliances. Networking, you know, you're trying to pretty much try to get a leg up and trying to build relationships so that you can use that opportunity. Strategic alliances is really reciprocal. You know, I'm building a relationship with this individual, but I'm trying to help that individual reach their goals and their desires. That individual is doing the same thing. I think now you have to build those strategic alliances. Your professor, you know, you want him to help you get a job, but you're doing those things in terms of being a better student. That you're taking those leadership roles in those organizations on campus. That he can say, hey, that's one of my brightest students. So when companies come, he's one of the individuals. You're one of the individuals that they're selecting. So building those strategic alliances and building those skill sets, you know, you have to build those skills. And anything that's worth having is worth putting some effort in. So those are some of the things that can address the question that you asked me.
Okay. In closing, any last thoughts, and then tell us where can we get your two books we've been talking about for the past hour.
Sure. I think in the 21st century, as we left 2011, a lot of people didn't had some unfulfilled dreams. Branding becomes very important. Building a brand that says a lot about you, whether you're online and offline. In terms of where you can get the book, Amazon.com or any online or offline bookstore, you can receive the book, or you can go to my website, www.darylgreen.org.
Okay, perfect. And again, what's that website again?
The website is www.darylgreen.org.
Okay, and also you can get the books on Amazon, I'm sure.
That's correct.
Okay, great. Well, Dr. Green, thank you for joining the program today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for doing a great job and getting the information out to your listeners.
Great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Again, this has been another production of The Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. You can download this episode on iTunes on Blog Talk Radio. Everybody, thank you for listening to the program. I do ask you, my producer has reminded me, if you go on to iTunes, please go ahead and write a review about the show or write on the page to say, you know, something has stood out with you that you enjoyed about the particular show or the episode or the speaker. Write the things about it. We really appreciate your comments. Also, if you have any guests or show topics you want to suggest, you can go ahead and email it to us at info@applecapitalgroup.com, and we'll be more than happy to take a look at it for next month. Thank you for listening, everybody. Everybody have a great day. This is Tim Jacquet with The Core Business Show.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.